Many years ago, Riley Knight completed a degree in history. This proved to be a bad move, as it was absolutely useless for him. Until now, here's some half-assed history.
What's going on, mate? Great to have you along for some more half-assed history. This week on the agenda, we're going to be having a chat about Wilhelm II, the last German emperor. Now, this bloke... Well, look, I'm not going to bury the lead here. He was a straight-up wacko. He, of course, was the man who helped to lead the Germans into the First World War. And the fact that a crazy person was at the helm during this period of in history was not a particularly good thing for Germany, I have to say, and overall probably a pretty bad thing for the world at large, because his actions, as, you know, just a straight-up nutcase, had some pretty far-reaching consequences in terms of global history, into, you know, the development of the Second World War and all of that sort of stuff. And he was pretty instrumental in a lot of what was going on internationally at the time. But, of course, that's all pretty boring. I'm not going to chat too much about that. That's all boring. You know, dates and facts and figures and names. We're not too into that here at Half-Ass History. We're going to talk about the fact that, you know, this bloke liked to slap other blokes on the ass with the flat of a sword. That's much more in our wheelhouse here. So let's get to it and have a chat about some of the ridiculous nonsense that this fellow got up to. We're going back to 1859 for his birth here. The 27th of January he's born, so day after Australia Day, get around him. Well, actually, Australia Day was definitely not a thing at this stage, but in any case, still get around him. He is the eldest son of Prince Friedrich and Princess Victoria. Now, Friedrich is the son of King Wilhelm I, who would go on to be Wilhelm I of Germany, but he's actually not the... Germany doesn't exist. So he's not... He can't be the Emperor of Germany at this stage. Germany doesn't even exist. Germany's only established in 1871 after the Franco-Prussian War. So at this stage, Wilhelm his grandfather Wilhelm is the King of Prussia. Friedrich is the first in line to the kingdom. And of course, Wilhelm, our mate here, is the second in line. So as you can see, well and truly setting himself up for a life with the old silver spoon firmly in the gob. This is also helped by his mother's family, because his mother, Victoria, is the daughter of Queen Victoria of Britain. So his grandpa is the King of Prussia and his grandma is the Queen of Britain. So this bloke is, he's got all the pedigrees in the world. And as a result, you know, he's well and truly set up half German, half British, and well and truly, you know, I'm rubbing shoulders with the most powerful families in Europe at the stage. When he's born, his old man Friedrich is acting as a regent for his grandfather, who is, you know, getting on in years. But unfortunately for our mate Wilhelm, things get off to a bad start for him right from the get go, because when his birth is taking place, the doctor who was delivering him absolutely stuffed it all up beyond belief. Wilhelm was a breech birth, and as I say, the doctor, he made a total circus of it here, ended up causing Wilhelm pretty severe nerve damage to his neck and upper arm. And this nerve damage meant that his left arm got all sort of, deformed and mangled, and suffered from paralysis, didn't grow properly. It was actually about 15 centimetres shorter than his right. And that is a pretty bad way to kick off your readings here on planet Earth. But, you know, you've got to show a bit of ticker, you've got to get past it. And Wilhelm absolutely did not do this. His disability really messed with his head and sort of went to pretty strongly develop or influence his development, as a boy and as a young man. When looking at pictures of this bloke, actually, you may not really be able to see the deformity that he had, because he was so ashamed of it. His withered arm, he was so self-conscious about it that he'd always pose with it at a funny angle, or he'd have it resting on a sword or a cane or something like that to make it seem like it was longer, like a normal length. Anyway, this situation with his arm, as I say, dominated his development as a youngster, and he was tremendously ashamed of it. And it's a bit, which is a bit of a shame, really. I mean, no one really deserves to have to suffer for that. Doesn't matter how much of a prick you end up being. It's not really, you know, not really something anyone should have to deal with. But it wasn't helped by his mum's attitude to it, because young Vicky, she absolutely hated her son's disability and forced him to go through all sorts of the most horrific stuff to, you know, to try to sort of fix it or something, whatever. Everything, you know, from electric shock therapy to, you know, proper pagan stuff like wrapping freshly killed animals around it. So poor Wilhelm, he's gone through it all. He's having a terrible time. And as a result, well, not maybe just as a result of this, but this certainly didn't help the fact that he was an absolute terror. He was a real bastard of a kid. There's one, you know, he's a wild child. There's one story about him being at a royal wedding in the UK in 1863. He's only 4 years old. You know, he's all dressed up in his Highland costume. He's loving it, complete with a little dagger, a little dirk there. And he gets bored during the ceremony and he starts acting up like, you know, this little monster. So the poor bloke who has to look after him, his uncle, Duke Albert, tells him to put a sock in it, you know, carrying on like a pork chop, young man, sit there, you know, be quiet and mind your business there. Now, in response, young Wilhelm rips out his knife and has a crack at Albert. Albert tries to take the little dagger off him, and so Wilhelm bites him on the leg like a little maniac and makes, you know, an enormous scene here at the wedding. But get this, Queen Victoria, she loves it. She finds the whole thing really, really funny, and she reckons that little Wilhelm is a top-notch grandson, really, you know, kicking goals with both feet, having a great time. Anyway, over the years, Wilhelm, he gets through school and all the rest of it, where he actually demonstrates that he's got a pretty quick mind. The problem was that he had an enormously erratic temper to go with it. He'd fly off the handle left, right, and centre. Doesn't matter how, you know, how smart he was here, he just couldn't control his emotions. He ends up getting really into the military, absolutely loving the culture of the Prussian nobs, who are all about, you know, smart uniforms and parades and all that sort of stuff. And this means that in 1879, when he does some time with the 1st Regiment of Foot Guards, he absolutely loves it. This bloke is all about the military. He loves every bit of it, the uniform, the orders, the marching up and down, and also, depending on who you ask, the general sort of homoerotic undertone of the whole business. His dad was involved in the wars that preceded the creation of the German Empire in 1871, of course, the most important one being the Franco-Prussian War, but there were others. And so young Wilhelm, he loved his old man. He adored him. He saw him as a big-shot war hero. But even you know, after this admiration, this you know, the way that Wilhelm loved his dad, the two blokes were very, very distant. Emotional bonding between father and son was right out of the question. This is a very grand tradition in the Hohenzollern family. I didn't mention this, that Wilhelm and Friedrich and all the others are part of the Hohenzollern family, one of the most important and influential noble dynasties in Europe throughout, you know, the last 500 years. But going all the way back to, you know, Frederick the Great, who, as we discussed in episode one, didn't really have a great relationship with his father. This is a proud tradition of the Hohenzollerns, as well as, you know, kicking ass up and down Europe with all the Prussians. Anyway, unfortunately for Wilhelm, this is also the case with his mum. Vicky was always very cold to her poor son, which had some very interesting consequences. We can talk about some of them now. Some historians reckon that he had a huge Oedipus complex, evidenced by some of the pretty racy letters that he sent her. Here's a quote from one of them. "I have again dreamt about you. This time I was alone with you in your library when you stretched forth your arms and pulled me down. Then you took off your gloves and laid your hand gently on my lips for me to kiss it. I wish you would do the same when I am in Berlin alone with you in the evening." So, yeah, this bloke was a bit of a weird beard in that regard. Anyway, that was, just to remind you, that was a letter to his mum. Anyway, he also idolised his granddad, who became Kaiser Wilhelm I in 1871, again due to this era of Prussian and then German military dominance once the Franco-Prussian War was over. He actually rejected his mum's attempts to talk him around to British democracy, as he was so gung-ho for this militaristic autocracy. Of course, Britain has a parliamentary democracy at this stage. Germany well and truly still an autocracy there. And eventually, as a result, you know, despite the admiration he had for his grandpa and his father and all the distance that he had with his mother, as a result of, you know, what happens here, his relationship with his parents becomes strained to the point of dysfunction. And there's one person who actually helped this momentum, the dysfunction actually, you know, sort of ramp up and up. And this bloke is Otto von Bismarck. Bismarck is a super interesting dude, you know, with a story of his own to explore, but in this case, he won over young Wilhelm by talking to him about, you know, how his parents were putting British interests above German ones, which Wilhelm did not like one little bit, as you can imagine. So, you know, Otto von Bismarck is there as a little devil on his shoulder with a pitchfork and you know, the horns and the tail going, "Oh, listen to your parents, they're not looking after the Germans properly." That's probably not how von Bismarck talked. No, it probably is, actually. Who knows? Anyway, this manipulation ultimately meant that Wilhelm ended up with a very strong suspicion and a very powerful dislike of the British, despite being half British himself, remember, which obviously had very important consequences later on as we head towards the First World War. He's kind of, you know, Bismarck has kind of poisoned the well there when it comes to Wilhelm and his view of the British. Anyway, he gets married in 1880 to a bird named Augusta Victoria of Schleswig-Holstein, and they stayed together for 4 decades until she died, and they have 7 kids together. So in 1884... he also got stuck into some diplomatic work here and there, and unfortunately and unsurprisingly, for someone who was definitely a few stubby short of a six-pack, he makes a bit of a meal of it. By this stage, his weirdness has definitely emerged to a very obvious degree. He's often, you know, been a bit of a dirty bastard with people he's chatting to, and he has a very unfortunate habit of slapping other blokes on the arse. Unfortunately, his status as a you know, huge big weirdo doesn't diminish even after he takes the throne in 1888, after his old man dies of throat cancer. Anyway, as I say, in 1888, Wilhelm does become the third and final German emperor. His grandpa Wilhelm I is the first, obviously, in the top job. And then his dad Friedrich has a crack for only 99 days in 1888, but he's dead pretty quick. As a side note, actually, there's something of a tradition in Prussia for the kings to be either called Friedrich Wilhelm or Friedrich Wilhelm. And this gets especially confusing when they reset the numbers after changing government types. There had been 500,000 Wilhelms before our mate the Kaiser, but he's back to Wilhelm II now that it's an empire and not the Kingdom of Prussia anymore. Anyway, poor old Wilhelm II, I have to say, he does a pretty terrible job at being emperor for a number of reasons. Now, we'll cover off all the boring stuff first before getting into him, you know, playing funny buggers in just a minute, so boring stuff out of the way. One of the first things Wilhelm does is make a colossal mistake and give Otto von Bismarck the arse. This is a huge error, as Bismarck was and still is an absolutely hugely towering figure in German politics. He was known as the Iron Chancellor. And I tell you what, he did not muck about. He fought the all these wars of German unification. He essentially pulled together the modern state of Germany, in addition to being one of the hardest blokes you'd ever meet. This man almost single-handedly conceived, or at least shaped, the Europe that we have even today, as in terms of the division of cultures, of peoples, of languages. And he was enormously influential and instrumental in establishing the power structure that led towards the First World War. He was one of the most skilled diplomats of the time, and I tell you what, he did a bang-up job of looking after Germany's interests. There is so much to talk about with this bloke, and I would love to do an episode on him, but unfortunately, he's just not all that funny, which is a classic move for, you know, probably the most German bloke ever to live, I have to say. Anyway, despite Bismarck doing everything he could to win Wilhelm over as a young man, now that Wilhelm is the top dog of the heap, they start to butt heads. Now, Bismarck was a bit of a drama queen. He could be pretty melodramatic at some times, and he would often threaten Wilhelm I with his resignation whenever he wasn't getting his way. So when Wilhelm II and him start stoushing, he tries to use this old trick on Wilhelm II in 1890. Obviously, it had done him very well in the past, and it sort of scared Wilhelm's predecessors into giving Bismarck his way. But this time, unfortunately, Wilhelm calls his bluff and says, "No worries, mate. Shut the door after you. Cheers, mate. Good on you. On your bike. Tell your story walking. Good on you. Get out of here." Now, Bismarck can't believe this, but honestly, he's actually not all that upset by it, because he knows that this saber-rattling idiot emperor is going to end up with a war, and he wants no part of it. And sure enough, this fragile European peace that Bismarck had sort of kept together for years and years, it came undone in the coming time. No small thanks to Wilhelm making a colossal tit of himself and not having Bismarck there to smooth things over. So with Bismarck out of the picture and not there to boss him about, Wilhelm now gets on with his agenda, building up German military power, especially the navy. This bloke was very keen to get stuck into some kind of scrap or another. Most of the sort of big stuff-ups he'd made had surrounded conflict with other nations, be it military or diplomatic. But unfortunately, he just wasn't cut out to be a leader. He was brash and impatient. He didn't listen to anyone. He was brimming with misplaced self-confidence and just completely unstable. Despite his, very sharp intelligence and strong interest in modern technology, Wilhelm still basically only ever really opened his mouth to change feet. A very famous example of him making an enormous ass of himself was his response to the Boxer Rebellion, which was when anti-colonial forces in China went up against blokes from all around the world, British, American, Russian, French, Japanese, and German, kind of. The Germans actually were pretty late to the party and missed out on most of the fighting, but this didn't stop old Wilhelm getting up on his soapbox and flapping his gums. His speech was so over the top. He compared the modern German army to Attila and his Huns, and told his troops to make sure that no Chinese will ever again dare to look cross-eyed at a German. Now, obviously, this speech, it pissed off quite a lot of people, because he's up there strutting around like a peacock, saying all sorts of dumb stuff, while his boys didn't even get there in time for the scrap in the first place. But I tell you what, this was nothing compared to the monumental, incredible mistake he made that became known as the Daily Telegraph Affair in 1908. Basically, he does this interview with the Daily Telly, a London newspaper, where the journo just sat there speechless, his jaw on the floor here, as this bloke spouted off some of the craziest nonsense you'll ever hear. The purpose of the interview was to calm things down a little bit between Britain and Germany, as tension between the two nations was at an all-time high. Again, a lot of this was to do with the fact that Germany was building up its navy. But not only did he fail to, you know, build any kind of bridge with the British during this interview, he also managed to piss off the French, the Russians, and the Japanese with the stuff that he said. So basically what's happened here is he's gone up to a mate at a party and he's gone, sorry, mate, just watch it. You got a bit of tomato sauce on your jumper there. Let me get it. And instead of, you know, wiping it off his mate's jumper, he's smeared it all over his mates and the two blokes standing next to them, and then picked up the sauce bottle and sprayed it all over the curtains and then stamped it into the carpet while giving them all the middle finger is effectively, you know, a pretty apt way to imagine what came of this interview. What has happened is during this interview, he is just talking nonsense about all these issues. He's obviously hadn't done his homework. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And he's just sort of, you know, letting fly with all these off the cuff remarks. The most famous line he delivered was, "You English are mad, mad, mad as March hares." Now, today that doesn't seem like much, but geez, it did not go down well at the time. He also talked about how France and Russia had been up to no good and, you know, playing silly buggers behind Germany's back, and that most Germans hated them, which was, you know, a pretty nasty thing to say on behalf of your own people. But then, when questioned, because obviously the hot button issue of the time is the German Navy and the fact that it's being built up and, you know, might even be able to contest the British Navy. When he's questioned about this ever-growing Navy, he goes, "Oh, no, don't worry about that. That's because we're going after the Japanese, not you blokes." Now, perhaps he thought that the Japanese didn't have, you know, newspapers, but the Japanese weren't particularly pleased to hear that the Germans were, you know, coming gunning for them and building this Navy just for that purpose. Anyway, the net result of this interview is that the international suspicions about this bloke being an absolute wacko are confirmed and tensions are rising even further. We're only a few years out from the First World War, of course, but more personally, however, the fallout of this interview absolutely wrecked the ridiculously inflated self-confidence of this emperor. And this had some pretty important consequences as we head further and further into the First World War. Anyway, if you'll believe it, that's the boring stuff. I said we would talk about the boring stuff before getting onto the good stuff. That's the boring stuff. So strap yourselves in, ladies and gentlemen. Hold on to your butts, because it's about to get buck wild up in here. Previous to this interview and previous to, you know, the deflation of his self-confidence, he thought he was the hottest property in town for years and years and years, and his insane behaviour indicated this very strongly. A bunch of politicians and diplomats actually wrote about how mental poor old Wilhelm was. Bismarck, obviously, described him as having an abnormal mental condition, which I think is rather generous. An Austrian diplomat reckoned that he had, quote, a screw loose, and even a Prussian diplomat, someone who's supposed to be on his side, wrote that Wilhelm was possessed by an evil spirit. The best one, however, came from an American diplomat named Colonel Edward House, who simply said that the emperor was crazy, which I think is a very astute observation in their house. Anyway, I first got interested in this bloke's story after listening to the very excellent podcast No Such Thing as a Fish, where they talk about some of the rubbish that he got up to, and you should definitely listen to that podcast if you haven't come across it already. It is very well and truly worth your time, so have a listen to that, No Such Thing as a Fish. In one of the episodes, they talked about, you know, some of the insane things that this bloke got up to. And this was, you know, what then caused me to go and do a bunch of extra research about him because, yeah, I'll share with you some of the stuff they covered off in that episode here. First of all, he loved to play dress-ups. He had hundreds and hundreds of different military uniforms, many of them from nations other than Germany, and he would change clothes several times a day. He wore particular uniforms for different activities, which obviously you can understand. You don't want to, you know, go riding in your tuxedo, but it wasn't really on that level. Instead, it was things like he would only ever eat plum pudding while dressed in a British Admiral's uniform. He also loved to dress up in the uniforms of the nations of visiting dignitaries, which is pretty bloody weird, to be honest. There's a very famous picture of him with his cousin, Tsar Nicholas of Russia, where they're wearing each other's uniforms, and you can see the look on the face of Nicholas. He looks like he's wishing one of the guards would shoot him so he didn't have to hang out with his weird cousin. But, you know, aside from dressing up, there's a bit of evidence that poor old Wilhelm was a repressed homosexual, or at least had, you know, certain urges in that direction. You know, things like strong, tall and handsome officers receiving personal promotions from the Kaiser above their uglier, shorter and more competent colleagues. And he tended to surround himself in the inner circle of blokes who, you know, looked like bloody Chippendale dancers, many of whom were in fact gay themselves, and he used to call them all darling. But whether or not Wilhelm was gay is largely irrelevant on an objective level, obviously, but his odd behaviour with this sort of thing may have had something to do with the attitudes of the time, and it certainly influenced his behaviour. So, you know, it's at least a little bit important. But, you know, all this weird behaviour had very far-reaching consequences for the world as we head towards the First World War. But it was nowhere was it more mental than at his court. You know, we can talk about the external implications of his behaviour, but the internal ones are where the party really kicks off. It was very risky business being in the Kaiser's court because of some of the weird stuff that he did. Firstly, he liked to physically punish noblemen at court when they annoyed him. For example, he made them do squats or jumping jacks and stuff like that. And seeing as some of these blokes were in their 70s, it was a hard bloody yakka for some of them, as you can imagine. His court was also the stage for some very weird performances. A bloke named Dietrich von Hussen, a Prussian noble and a member of the German High Command, died of a heart attack while dancing for Wilhelm in a little tutu. But it goes a lot further than that, if you believe it. He set up this secret society called the White Stag Dining Society. And to be accepted as a member, you had to let Wilhelm smack you on the ass with the flat of a sword. And I guess you would just hope that he was able to distinguish the flat of the sword from the blade, because that would be a very difficult story to explain to anyone who then, you know, was ever privy to that information. Anyway, at one of these meetings, a bloke named Count Emil Goetz von Schlitz got all dressed up like a poodle, got down on his hands and knees, and crawled around barking at everyone. So this was just a sort of regular, you know, this is just another meeting of the White Stag Dining Society. But what makes this story all the worse about poor old Count Emil was that according to one of the blokes who witnessed this whole thing, Count Emil was being a super dirty bloke. He was loving it, right? And had what the witness described as a marked rectal opening at the end of his costume. And naturally, Wilhelm bloody loved it. Anyway, this insanity isn't really what Wilhelm is best known for today. His role in the beginning of the First World War kind of eclipses a lot of this. And truth be told, he wasn't hugely involved in much of the war because he was a huge idiot when it came to the military. And, having said that, in the opening stages of the July Crisis, he did certainly play a very big part. He was mates with Archduke Franz Ferdinand, whose assassination you can, of course, hear all about right here on Half-Assed History, episode 13. Don't even worry about it, mate. So when the Archduke sort of, you know, gets his head blown off in Serbia, Wilhelm was well and truly ready to crack some skulls. He was basically a huge bully. Wilhelm saw the brewing conflict as an opportunity to assert German dominance. He figures out very quickly, however, that it's going to be a tough slog here, and gets pretty panicked when he realizes that Germany is going to have to fight a two-front war. With Russia to the east and France to the west, Germany is hemmed in and Wilhelm is not happy. And then when the UK starts chucking punches around as well, he is furious. He's spitting chips. Remember, he's cousins with both Tsar Nicholas and King George V, and he feels like they've completely betrayed him by going to war like this. As the war gets underway, and, you know, as he sort of bungles up more and more of the war effort, his generals slowly but surely, take more and more power away from him. He sort of, you know, waves his dick around as much as he could and tried to assert himself, but, you know, like a noisy kid at a wedding, he's just kind of pushed off to the side and given pointless tasks to look after. And within 2 years, Germany is basically a military dictatorship with Wilhelm as a figurehead, restricted to rubbish ceremonial stuff like awards, dues, and, you know, other stuff like that. Anyway, when it all comes a cropper in 1918 and Germany are forced to throw in the towel, things don't go too well for our mate Wilhelm either. He's desperate to hold on to one of the crowns. Even if he gives up being emperor, he wants to stay on as the King of Prussia. But it was not on the cards, however. The uprisings and the mutinies in Berlin, along with the total lack of support from the general public, means that he is forced to abdicate on the 9th of November 1918, which is the same day that the Weimar Republic was established. His abdication marked, by the way, the end of 4 centuries of his family's rule in Prussia. The Hohenzollerns had been in charge of Prussia since Duke Albert I in 1525, And this idiot ended up giving the game away. And there are, yeah, the Hohenzollerns, they are not in charge of Prussia anymore. 4 centuries of this dynasty's legacy ended just like that. Anyway, with the First World War done and dusted, Wilhelm is about as popular as a fart in an elevator, and as a result, he's forced to flee Germany altogether. He goes into exile, into the Netherlands, where he was pretty well looked after, all things considered. When Germany was forced to sign the Treaty of Versailles in 1919, some of the Allies were looking to prosecute Wilhelm for war crimes, but the Netherlands told them to get stuffed because they weren't going to extradite him. And Wilhelm was very, very happy about this too, as you can imagine. He publicly stated that he never wanted to go back to Germany until the monarch was restored. Anyway, over in the Netherlands, he buys himself a big old manor house in Doorn, and he remains there until his death, living in exile and getting involved in all sorts of, you know, rich knobby stuff like archaeology, hunting, and that sort of thing. He had a very interesting relationship with the Nazis, who obviously rose to power in the 1930s. Initially, he had hoped that there might actually end up being a Hohenzollern restoration once Hitler had seized power, and even got in touch with the Nazis to get a sense of whether it was on the cards, which I think is the very definition of wishful thinking. Hitler obviously basically told him to stick it up his ass because Hitler actually blamed Wilhelm in part for having lost the First World War. Wilhelm then became very critical of Hitler, and after Kristallnacht in 1938, he came out and said, "For the first time, I'm ashamed to be German." But this didn't stop him from getting in touch with Hitler again in 1940, so don't give him too much credit, congratulating him on the victories in the Netherlands and in France. And the telegram read, "Congratulations, you have won using my troops." And after reading the correspondence he'd received from Wilhelm, Hitler is said to have turned, exasperated, to his valet and said, "What an idiot." Anyway, poor old Wilhelm didn't live to see the end of the war. He died in 1941 at the age of 82. And unfortunately for him, Hitler's political opportunism came to the fore once again at this stage. Wilhelm, as you might imagine, he didn't like the Nazis all that much and very clearly ordered that there were to be no swastikas or any other Nazi symbols at his funeral. Hitler, on the other hand, had done a lot of work to attempt to set himself up to be seen as the spiritual successor to this great dynasty of Prussian kings. And so Wilhelm got a military funeral with swastikas out the arse, basically. He did, however, get his wish. He never returned to Germany. And his bones actually still lie today in the Netherlands. I assume they won't be moved back to Germany until the Hohenzollerns are restored to the throne. And seeing as their old palace in Berlin is currently a construction site, plonking the royal arse of his descendant Georg Friedrich onto the throne seems highly unlikely. So I hope old Kaiser Bill is nice and comfortable over there in Dorn. But that's it. That's all she wrote today, sports fans. That is the story of Wilhelm II. And again, not too much of a focus on the sort of quote-unquote real stuff that he did, because he didn't do a whole lot of it, but there's certainly, you know, even with a lack of involvement in the First World War, it's very clear that his general sort of deal as the leader of the Germans definitely didn't help the tensions at the time and definitely didn't do the world any favours, as we spiralled towards the First World War. Anyway, that is that for another week. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's always so fantastic to have your company on these podcasts. So thanks for tuning in. And of course, we'll be back next week with another episode. In the meantime, if you want to check out halfasthistory.net, it's the website for the podcast. You can find old episodes there. And of course, you can get in touch with me through the website. There's a contact form there. Or just send us an email directly, halfasthistory@gmail.com. I've still got plenty of stickers to give away. I'll send them to you for free if you get in touch with me and just send me your address. No worries at all. They'll be on their way. And if you want to get across Twitter, you can find Half Assed History at Half Assed History without an O. Wouldn't fit. Very annoying. And there, I just tweet out stuff that I've been researching and links to all the latest episodes and what have you. But as I say, that is it for another week. Thanks for hanging out with me. As usual, leaving you with a question posed on Reddit here. Reddit historian I Am Irish Pat wants to know, why did people call it World War I? Did they go into it already knowing that there was going to be a sequel?